There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm trying to stay cool by drinking as much water as I can. I'm not a big water drinker, but I have got an empty bottle of Chita single grain Japanese whiskey that I've emptied out, and I'm using it as a delicious water bottle, though it does make me look a little bit like an alcoholic.
Get yourself some Bokari Sweat. I need to ship you over a bottle of Bokari Sweat to keep you hydrated. You can buy it.
You get the powder. Yeah, you can, yeah. Around the corner from me, there's a little Japanese supermarket, and you can buy Bokari Sweat in powder form or can.
Wonderful. Get yourself some Bokari Sweat. That'll be better than drinking water out of a whiskey bottle. Brilliant. I've just driven back from Yamagata Prefecture. It's been a long 3-hour drive back from seeing Natsuki. You might recall a week or two ago, we talked about doing a Treasure Island style video. But unfortunately, as you'll know, Pete, because you came over, I think, last year and endured it, Japan has a rather treacherous rainy season, and the idea of going to a secluded remote island during rainy season wasn't a great idea. The boat got cancelled. The trip had to be postponed. It was a disaster. A mitigated disaster.
Sorry to hear that.
I was gutted.
That's terrible.
I spent like unfathomable sums of money on an outfit for Natsuki with like a pirate sword and a hat. You can see it on Twitter or Facebook. I took a photo on the port. The very port we were supposed to leave from, I snapped a photo of him wearing his gear. He looks rather snazzy, but hopefully we'll go again.
When you say unfathomable, do you mean 100 yen from the 100 yen shop?
You know me too.
That's usually how it goes. Yep.
You know me too well. To be fair, I think it was more like $100, about Ichimayen this
bloody
time.
Hell.
So, yeah, went the full mile. Natsuki got what he wanted. He's got like a pocket circumference, not a circumference. What's it called? I can't talk. What's the thing, that shows you the direction, north. Compass.
Compass.
Why am I calling it a circumference?
I do not know. I just do not know, Chris.
I haven't drunk enough water. I haven't had enough Bokari Sweat today.
Yeah.
He's also got like an eye patch, a swanky leather hat. It's great. There was no expense spared.
You look great.
Above and beyond $100. But we're still going to do it. We're still going to do it. Mm. Hopefully in August or September when boats are a thing and the rain has stopped. And I'm looking forward to that. We were able to exploit Natsuki for a live show. I don't know if you caught it. We did a spontaneous live show on Saturday on the second channel, Abroad Perspective. And Natsuki cracked out his guitar and took song requests from the 5,000 people that watched it live. And that was a lot of
beautiful.
Fun as well. It was good to catch up with Natsuki.
What songs did he bash out? Because obviously if they're too accurate, and I know Natsuki is an incredible performer / singer, presumably if they're too accurate, you might get struck off for using copyrighted music.
Copyright infringement. I think he did like 10-second excerpts of songs. He did Smells Like Teen Spirit. Kicked off the show to Nirvana, did a bit of The Clash in there, Led Zeppelin. It was pretty cool, actually. It was one of the most fun live shows I've ever done. Natsuki's always hilarious. You never know what he's going to say or do next. And with a guitar, it was great. I just sat there drinking some Strong Zero, watching him bash out a song or two. It was brilliant. And
I saw him drink some sake at one point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I evilly supplied him with one cup sake, which is far from good.
No. the worst.
Have you had it? Have you drunk that stuff?
It was the first drink I had in Japan the first time I went. And everyone laughed at me because it is disgusting.
I don't know. There's something... It seems kind of cool at first, doesn't it? Plucking a cup of sake off the shelf and pulling off the ring top, the top of the bottle, and downing it. But unfortunately, it just tastes awful. It smells awful. Like, I gave him the one cup sake. I had my pineapple-flavoured Strong Zero. Lovely drink. I recommend it. I gave him the one cup sake. He ripped off the top, and I could smell that horrible, kind of bitter, unpleasant sake. And,
it's cooking sake,
too.
Isn't it?
it's not good, yeah. I can't recommend it, but you've got to try it once. It's got to be done. This week, we got a message from a guy called Dan from New Jersey, and the message read, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Dan from New Jersey here. I've been tuning into the Abroad in Japan podcast religiously over the last 2 years, and it's helped me keep my sanity intact during many a work shift. Whenever I hear the intro song and Chris's claim of being the podcast being probably the best way to learn about life in Japan without actually being in Japan, I know the days about to get a whole lot better. During those introductions, we hear about Pete's credentials as a self-confessed Japanophile who loves the country and culture. But I feel the time has come to test him once and for all, quiz him in an upcoming episode, and let's see if he lives up to his impressive mantle and his testament to being a Japanophile. Good luck, Dan from New Jersey." What do you think, Pete? Do you have the credentials?
Well, probably not, but has Dan from New Jersey provided the questions himself, or
no.
Have you done them?
No, he hasn't.
Oh, so he's basically just made you do a load of work. So
he's made...
Who is the winner here? I think it might be Dan from New Jersey.
Yeah, I feel like a mug now. But I took Dan's call to action. I did create a quiz of 21 questions about Japan, the culture, the language, various aspects, geography, general knowledge. And I'm going to test you, Pete, and we're going to see how much of a self-confessed Japanophile you really are. Are you as good as we've been made to believe over the last 2 years? And to the audience listening at home, to you guys, why not follow along? We'll be doing each question and answering one by one. There's 21 questions. At the end of the quiz, let's see how many you get right out of 21. And let us know on Twitter. Let's see if you can beat Pete's score, whatever it will be. Are you ready, though, Pete? Are you ready?
Well, about as ready as I'll ever be.
Excellent.
I'm topless in a hot kitchen.
Oh God!
I can't have my fan on because obviously it would affect the recording. So I'm very upset. So I'm hoping I'll get through it anyway.
Brilliant. Well, I'm taking one for the team as well because the aircon.
Yeah.
I mean, my room doesn't have an aircon. The room over has an aircon, while the aircon air doesn't get in here because the door doesn't open the full way. So it's almost as bad as what you just said. So
we're both on the same board.
Even though I've definitely still got some aircon. Right, here we go then. So keep an eye on your score at home, ladies and gentlemen, and let us know on Twitter or the fax machine how you did if you can beat Pete. All right, quiz question number one, Pete. Japan is an island nation, but how many islands does it have in total? A, 4 islands. B, 487 islands. Or C, 6,852 islands.
I know for a fact that it's got a lot of islands, and I think it might be in the thousands. So I'm going to go for C, 6,000 and whatever it was islands.
6,852. You are absolutely correct. Well done.
Yes.
It is 6,852 islands, 430 of which are inhabited. Of course, most famously, Japan has 4 islands, Shikoku, Honshu, Kyushu, and Hokkaido. But there are lots of smaller islands, and 6,852. Impressive. Well done. Off to a good start. Number two, when receiving a wrapped gift in Japan, what act is not considered to be rude? A, opening the gift before the person who gifted it to you. B, not reciprocating the gesture with a follow-up gift. Or C, tearing the wrapping on the gift.
Ooh. What I just not consider to be rude.
Not rude.
Or
A, opening the gift before the person.
Opening the gift before the person who gifted it to you. B, not reciprocating the gesture with a follow-up gift. Or C, tearing the wrapping on the gift. I think tearing the wrapping on the gift might be a bit rude. Not reciprocating the gesture with a follow-up gift, also a bit rude. I think you're allowed to open the gift in front of the person who gave it
to
you.
So you're going
to
say A?
Yeah, A.
That's the wrong answer.
The
answer was B. It's a little bit rude. If someone gives you a present, if you start opening it in front of them, it's a little bit awkward and rude. And C is also rude, tearing the preciously wrapped gift before the person who's gifted it to you is a little bit rude. Whereas B is not rude. So if you give me, if a Japanese friend gives you a present, it's all right. You don't have to give them a present in return. That's not rude. There you go. Off to a good start. Second one, not so good.
50-50.
Number three. How tall is the beloved Mount Fuji? A, 2,876 metres. B, 3,776 metres. Or C, 4,276 metres.
I'm going to give the people at home a little time to figure out what it is.
You're just going to go Wikipedia, aren't you?
I might ask Siri.
No Wikipedia.
I reckon it is a diminutive 2,876 metres.
2,876 metres is wrong. The answer
is
B.
Oh, for crying out loud.
3,776 metres, the tallest mountain in Japan by a margin of several hundred metres. Okay, number four. Geisha are renowned and revered in and outside Japan, but what does the word geisha actually mean? A, woman of the night, B, person of the arts, or C, honourable entertainer?
It's got to be honourable entertainer. Women of the night seems a little too on the nose. Person of the arts doesn't really make any sense. Honourable entertainer, I'm going to go with that.
You're saying C. The answer is B, person of the arts.
Oh, what? Oh, for crying out. It's just endlessly. I started so well. I've fallen to pieces.
You got one right and then the next three wrong. The kanji means art and person of the arts, and not woman of the night. Well done. If there wasn't that one, that would be a little bit shady. Number five, what is the Japan? You might be able to do this one. We know you love monkeys. What is the Japanese macaque's claim to fame? A, it's the fastest monkey on Earth. B, it's the only monkey known to bathe in hot springs. Or C, it's the northernmost primate on Earth.
I reckon it's got to be the northernmost primate on Earth, because you could put any monkey in a hot spring and it would probably have a lovely time. So, yeah, it's the northernmost primate on Earth.
Absolutely correct. Well done. See,
yes,
it is the most northernmost primate on Earth. Brilliant. Well done. You're back in the game, Pete. You're back in the game.
Yes.
Things are on the way up. Nice one. Number six. What do you say to a chef in a Japanese restaurant after finishing your meal? A, gochisousama. B, itadakimasu. Or C, arigatou gozaimasu. So you've just finished your meal. Which of those three phrases would you say?
More, please. I'd say more, please. Itadakimasu is before the meal. I know that. Well, I mean, arigatou gozaimasu, you could say that to the chef, couldn't you? Thank you very much. I mean, yeah, I'm going to go for that. Gochisousama, isn't that like whatever they recommend? Or am I being stupid?
I can't tell you until you've given me the answer.
I'm going to go for thank you. Arigatou gozaimasu.
That is the wrong answer. The answer was A, gochisousama.
Flipping it. What, so you don't say thank you? Unbelievable.
No.
So rude.
It's actually a little bit weird to say arigatou gozaimasu. You would say gochisousama or gochisousama deshita, which literally means it was a feast. I remember when I was dating a Japanese girl, we went out for a dinner once, and at the end of it, I said to the chef, arigatou gozaimasu. And she sort of said, ha, 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 that's strange to say that, and made fun of me. And that has always stayed with me. And I've learned from my error there and then. But no, gochisousama literally means it was a feast. And that is the last thing you kind of say to the chef or the staff at a restaurant as you walk out the door. So remember that one. And itadakimasu, obviously, that's, as you got correctly, you say that before you kind of start your meal, thanking the living things that created the food before you. Unlucky, Pete. Unlucky. Number seven. Yeah. Which European country was the first to have contact with Japan? A, Holland. B, England. Or C, Portugal?
Very easy, this one. I'm going to give the people at home 2 seconds to decide. But it was, of course, Holland or the Netherlands, depending on which part of the country the people came from.
That was wrong. You're wrong.
What? Oh, what? Oh, no. Portuguese.
I loved the level of conviction in your voice there. There was almost a degree of arrogance there, an undertone of arrogance, an undercurrent of overconfidence. The answer is Portugal.
Was it? Right. Okay.
Two Portuguese traders in 1543 rocked up to Japan, and they were the first known European travellers to have had contact. Although, of course, Holland did have pretty strong relations with Japan in the years after that. Unlucky. Why were you so convinced it was Holland?
Didn't they do a lot of trading back in the day? Their cheese?
Well, yeah, they were.
They used to sneak cheese in with their big trousers.
I don't know about that. Sneak cheese in their trousers.
Sneaking cheese in, yeah. I think that was the case.
Pete's version of history. I like that. That's quite an elegant
inaccurate story.
Oh, well. Let's see if you can get the next one right. I'm sure you can get the next one right, Pete. This is a question that is so you. Number 8. What is the number one beer in Japan? A. Sapporo Black Label. B. Asahi Super Dry. C. Kirin Ichiban. And I mispronounced Kirin. It's Kirin Ichiban. Which is the most popular beer in Japan?
The one you see, well, the one I've seen more than any other, it's got to be Asahi Super Dry. It's got to be.
You're going to say B?
I'm going to say B, Asahi Super Dry.
Correct. It is Asahi Super Dry. It's the most popular drink in Japan, or most popular beer in Japan, rather. Most places stock that, and most people get that when they order namabiru, a glass of beer, when they walk into an inn. My personal favourite, of course, is Sapporo. It just has a nicer flavour, has a more richer flavour. I found that Asahi Super Dry just tastes like tonic water, like flavour, tonic water with a bit of flavouring put in. I don't know. Kirin's okay, somewhere in the middle. What's your favourite?
I don't mind a bit of Asahi Super Dry, to be fair. It's nice and refreshing. I like my lagers, see. I like light beers.
Right. It's all right. Gets the job done. It's a nice starter. Question number 9. One of Japan's biggest annual events is Obon, typically held in August. But what does it commemorate? A. The end of the academic year and the start of a new one. B. It commemorates one's ancestors. Or C. Japan's bountiful nature, given its summer and things are growing. One of Japan's biggest annual events, Obon. And I'd recommend avoiding traveling during August, during Obon, because everything's so damn busy. A bit like Golden Week. But which of the three was it, Pete?
I mean, it's August, end of academic year, something new. Obon. I'm going to go for the end of the academic year and the start of a new one, even though B seems very complicated as an answer and makes me think that that might be correct.
The answer is B. It celebrates one's ancestors who are believed to return to the spirit world during Obon and visit their relatives. A was a bit of a trick one because the end of the academic year in Japan is actually in March and it kicks off in April, unlike the rest of the world. Although they're looking at changing that because it makes doing kind of intercultural things, international exchange programs, a little bit difficult, apparently. But they're postponing changing that for another few years. And it's not Japan's bountiful nature. But yeah, it's quite cool, Obon. People celebrate their ancestors. They're supposed to return to the spirit world. But yeah, don't travel during Obon, for the love of God. Do it at your peril.
Is it as busy as Golden Week?
It is at least as busy as Golden Week, yeah.
Right.
I'd really strongly avoid it. And also, it's bloody hot in August. As beautiful as Japan is, on the drive here, I was just in awe of the scenery, the luscious green rice fields. But then I got out of the car and I nearly melted and I dived straight back in to the sanctuary of air conditioning. So,
yeah,
avoid August at your peril. Number 10, which country has the largest Japanese community outside of Japan? Is it A, the US, B, Canada, or C, Brazil?
I know this one, guys.
I know this one.
Yeah, just like all the other ones I got wrong. I'm going to go for C, Brazil.
That is absolutely correct. Well done. Yeah. A lot of people don't know this. Yeah. Why do you know that, or how do you know that?
I think Peru, Brazil, there's a big diaspora of Japanese people. I can't remember why that's the case. I know there was a man of Japanese descent who became the Peruvian prime minister back in the day. I don't think he covered himself in glory, I must admit. But part of the world. Follow them.
Well, the main reason was in the 1800s, there was the end of the feudalistic society in Japan, right? Created a lot of poverty and at the same time, there's the end of slavery going on in Brazil. And Brazil had a lot of coffee plantations. And they turned to European immigrants to come to the plantations and help. And given the poverty going on in Japan at the time, about 164,000 Japanese came to Brazil between 1917 and 1940. Kicked off in the 1800s and kind of peaked around 1940, with 75% of the Japanese folks going to Sao Paulo. But there's still quite a big population there today, about 1.5 million Japanese folks or descendants of Japanese people living in Brazil, compared to 1.3 million in the US. But yeah, a lot of people don't know that. And I didn't know that.
Amazing.
Until I befriended a Japanese Brazilian chap in Yamagata. But well done. You're back in the game, Pete. You're now doing what? We've answered 10
questions.
Have
you even been keeping...
You've
got about
four.
Three right. Right, four. Fair dues.
I hope that makes you feel better about yourself. Number 11.
Yeah.
With a revenue of $272 billion in 2019, what is Japan's largest company? A, 7&i Holdings, the company that owns 7-Eleven. B, Sony Corporation. Or C, Toyota, biggest company in Japan by revenue.
I reckon it might be... There are a lot of 7-Elevens around.
There are.
But do they probably won't own the 7-Elevens in other parts of the world. So, sod it. I'm going to go for 7-Eleven. 7-1, 7&i Holdings, retail.
Oh, dear. The answer is Toyota.
Ah, oh, for crying out loud. Only because their products are more expensive.
Yes, it's very true. That was a good guess, to be fair. I probably would have guessed 7&i Holdings, so I didn't already know how damn big Toyota is. But no, Toyota is the biggest company in Japan by revenue, $272 billion. 7&i Holdings, only $61 billion, and Sony, $76. Japan rules the world when it comes to automobiles, and Toyota is the biggest in Japan by far. Oh, dear. Number 12. But a good guess, nonetheless. A good guess.
I'd have gone.
I feel that was a bit of an unfair question. We're deviating a little bit from Japanese culture there. This one's an interesting one. I don't know if you're going to get it. I certainly wouldn't, probably, if I hadn't lived here. Number 12. Which physical action is used to show that you are indicating yourself in Japan, like a gesture pointing to yourself?
Oh, right.
Is it A, you point to your nose with your index finger? B, you point to your chest with your thumb? Or C, you place your hand flat on your heart. Which one would you show? Which gesture would you do to indicate yourself?
I would probably go for the very polite, place your hand flat on your heart. What do you reckon?
What do I reckon? Well, I know the answer. What do we do in the West? What do we do in the West?
I guess kind of thumb to the chest. Yeah, it's a bit of a thumb, isn't it? Yeah. I do a little bit of hand flat on the heart. I'd probably go for that. That's quite universal.
It's universal, but unfortunately, it's also wrong. It's A.
Oh, for crying out loud. Nose.
You point with your index finger to your nose, looks a bit weird to me. I've never been able to wrap my head around that one. It just looks a bit childish and odd to... Coming from the West, it just looks a bit odd because people kind of... I don't know, if you do it in a mirror, it just looks a bit odd. But it's what they do here. If you want to indicate yourself in Japan, you kind of point at your nose with your index finger.
I thought they'd be like... You're basically saying, look at my nose. Not talking about yourself, talking about, look at my nose, everyone. Jeez.
Look at my nose.
That's hilarious.
Oh, dear. Well, number 13. Last week, or the week before, we talked about a chap who invited one of our listeners into his garage to listen, to join into a spontaneous karaoke session.
Oh, yeah. And this question, garage karaoke.
It was great, wasn't it? Garage karaoke. And this question is about the first karaoke machine. What year was the first karaoke machine introduced by inventor Daisuke Inoue? Was it A, 1967, B, 1971, or C, 1979? When was the first karaoke machine introduced? What do you reckon?
I'm going to go for... because you kind of need the... would you have the letters up on the screen? I don't know. I'm going to go for 1971. I'm going to go for 1971. Yes.
You did it. Well done, Pete.
Yeah, very arbitrary. Bit of a stab in the dark, that one.
Daisuke Inoue wanted to come up with a way that businessmen who were sitting alone in a bar could have a backing track while they were singing, apparently. So he invented the karaoke machine. Yeah, it's quite a nice idea.
So they didn't have a backing track beforehand. They just sang at the bar.
Just sang wildly alone in a bar, yeah. And then it kicked off 1971 and took off from there, kind of boomed straight after that. Good one, well done. Number 14, what is a yatai? Yatai, Japanese word, yatai. Is it A, an Okinawan pork dish, B, a straw hat worn by farmers, or C, a street stall or stand? What is a yatai?
A yatai, Chris, is a street stall or stand.
Hey, you're back in the game. Well done.
Back
absolutely.
In it.
And there's a good one in Fukuoka, really famous one by the river in Fukuoka. And a lot of good towns in Japan have a yataimura, including the town where I've just driven from, actually, Sakata, has a small yataimura. Mura means like village. So yataimura means a kind of village of stalls. And they're pretty popular because the stalls are quite small. You can fit like five or six people in. It's a great place to meet people. Have you been to one yourself, Pete? Have you actually?
I have, yeah. I've been to one in Fukuoka, very, very steamy behind all plastic. Sheets.
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty cool. It's nice on a summer's evening to sit there, have a drink, have some food in the open air. Beautiful. Number 15. Japan is renowned for its incredible food. Which city is nicknamed the Kitchen of Japan? Is it A, Nagoya, B, Fukuoka, or C, Osaka? The Kitchen of Japan. Which one is it?
Fukuoka does have some excellent variations on the ramen and the dishes, so I'm going to go for Fukuoka because obviously that's where all the fish would come in, I guess. I don't know.
Well, all the fish would come in. It's a good answer, but unfortunately the answer was C, Osaka, the very city we travelled in and dined in together. It's known as the Kitchen of Japan for its various dishes, okonomiyaki, takoyaki. What else do they have there? I can't think what else they have. I mean, those are
They're the main two.
Kushikatsu as well, kind of sticks of food that are boiled or deep fried, right? You get some chicken on a stick and then deep fry it. That's a popular one. But I think Osaka, one of the best places to try Japanese cuisine. And we certainly had a good run, didn't we, when we were in Osaka together?
We had a bloody good go. We had a bloody good go.
Number 16. An estimated how many vending machines are in Japan? A, 900,000. B, 5 million vending machines. Or C, 25 million. How many vending machines are in Japan? There's a lot.
Yeah, there is.
All three of those are big numbers.
Yeah, 25 million seems a little excessive. So I'm going to go for, I'm going to hedge my bets, take it nice and easy with a 5 million, if that's all right.
5 million, correct. The answer is 5 million. Well done, B. There's 5 million in Japan. Only 4.6 million in the US, despite having three times the population being a lot larger. So yes, Japan does have a heck of a lot of vending machines, and you can... It's a testament that when you walk down the street, it's not uncommon to see three vending machines piled next to one another, where you can take your choice of drinks. And it's a culture I believe we need in the UK. Would you agree with that?
I'd probably find myself eating way too much corn soup, which would probably do terrible things to my insides, because that's basically what I do when I see a vending machine in Japan. So yeah, I'd love it.
You had that in? Is that the one you had in Sapporo as well?
I think I might be clam chowder. Clam chowder.
Oh, God. You are a very daring man when it comes to the soup in vending machines. I just stick to the Bakari sweat. well done, though. 17. Which is Japan's most busiest train station? Busiest train station in Japan. A, Tokyo Station. B, Shibuya Station. Or C, Shinjuku Station. Busiest station in Japan.
We know this one. If you've listened to the podcast before, it's Shinjuku Station.
Correct. Well done. C, Shinjuku Station. 3.5 million people pass through Shinjuku Station every single day. That is
bloody
mental,
hell.
Isn't it? Can't believe it. And I cannot stand, just cannot do Shinjuku Station.
It.
It's horrible, isn't it? It's the station I get lost in the most, actually. After all these years, I still don't really know my way around it. And you will get lost too when you come to Japan. Tokyo Station's equally as bad, as is Shibuya, to be fair. And I think we said in a previous episode that seven of the world's busiest train stations are all in Japan, four or five of which are in Tokyo. Ikebukuro, I think, is also one of the busiest stations. But well done, Pete.
They'd probably be a little less busier if they didn't have like shopping centres built into them. It's just a little bit more confusing just having lots of shopping options everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, like Shinjuku's multi-layered. I remember trying to get a train and ended up walking through a shopping mall and just getting lost amongst a never-ending sea of souvenirs and things and toys. It's awful. Be careful, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in Shinjuku Station. Number 18. Tokyo is Japan's largest city by population, but which is the second largest? Is it A, Yokohama, B, Osaka, or C, Kyoto? Second largest city by population.
Well, Osaka seems like the popular thing to say, but... you know what? Why don't I just go for the popular one? Why am I second guessing Chris with his little, his muggy little quiz? I'm going to go for Osaka.
Muggy little quiz. Well, you've just muggy failed the muggy quiz. Little quiz. The answer was A, it was Yokohama.
Yokohama. Oh, bums.
Yokohama.
Well, it's not far away, is it, from Tokyo?
it's pretty much built into Tokyo. To be fair, I think it's a bit of a tricky question because Tokyo, there's two parts to it, really. Tokyo is its own city with a population of about 8 or 9 million. But if you include Tokyo's metropolitan area, which encompasses Yokohama, there's a population there of 36 million.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a cheeky question. But I guess the trick would be, what is Tokyo's second largest metropolitan area? In which case, then it would be Osaka or it would be Kansai. Unfortunately, getting it wrong again, Pete. Number 19. Right. Let's see if you get this one. Let's see if you can redeem yourself. Which Japanese number is considered to be bad luck? Is it A, 3, known as san in Japanese? B, number 4, shi in Japanese? Or C, 8, hachi in Japanese? Which is considered to be bad luck.
I think it's B for she, because I think sometimes... she, because they sometimes call it... Is it yon? I can't remember now. I'm just so far away from knowing any Japanese anymore.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. It is yon. You're correct. It is she.
Yay.
It is for. But not for that reason. It's because she sounds like death. Sounds like the
Shine.
Word for death. Shinu, yeah, Shinu.
Yeah.
That association with death gives it just bad luck, basically. Makes it bad luck. And tall buildings don't have a fourth floor often. If you go into a high-rise building or a hotel, often the fourth floor is just missing, which can be quite confusing, to be honest. there you go. Well done. Back in the game.
Thank you. Why, thank you.
Number 20. Very near the end now. What is the top operational speed of the Shinkansen, aka the bullet train? Is it A, 260 kilometers per hour, 161 miles per hour? B, 320 kilometers per hour, or 198 miles per hour? Or C, 400 kilometers per hour, 248 miles per hour? A, B, or C, fastest top operational speed of the Shinkansen?
I think 400 kilometers per second may be the maglev in China. So I'm going to go for B, 320 kilometers per hour / 198 miles per hour.
Well, hey, well done. Good one.
Yeah,
it is B.
Lovely.
320 kilometers per hour and the fastest train. You've actually ridden it the last time you were here. It's the Tohoku Shinkansen, the one that goes between Sendai and Tokyo. There's a stretch on that line between Sendai and Tokyo where it rockets up to 320 kilometers per hour, 198 miles per hour. And he can really feel it. Did you feel it when you're on the train, Pete? Did you feel the speed?
I was in grad class. I didn't care. I was like, yeah, I've got my free socks.
Oh, God. I mean, grand class as well is better noise insulated than other carriages. Better than, I think it's like not much noise in there as the train's at full pelt. So it's a bit deceptive. You can't really tell how fast you're going. But well done. Nice one. And the maglev train, I'm not entirely sure how fast it goes. I've been on the maglev train, actually, the one between Shanghai Airport and downtown Shanghai. And that
very
is
short,
quite,
really.
It's very short. Have you been on it?
I don't think it should really count as a train, really. They sort of go, it's the fastest train in the world. You go, well, I mean, it's the Heathrow Express, basically, isn't it? It does one thing very well.
You and your vendetta against the Heathrow Express. I love the Heathrow Express.
I love the Heathrow Express too.
I remember vividly. You slagged it off in a previous episode. I remember it.
Did I?
Because I love the Heathrow Express so much that when you spoke ill of the Heathrow Express, it remained in my mind. I don't remember what you said, but I was gutted.
I'm sure I was being very flippant. I don't mean anything I say on this podcast.
Very good. And the final question. Let's see if you can redeem yourself. 21, number 21. When meeting someone for the first time or asking for a favour in Japanese, which phrase would you use? A, hajimemashite. B, domo arigatou gozaimasu. Or C, yoroshiku onegai shimasu. Which phrase would you use when meeting someone for the first time or asking for a favour?
I thought mating for someone for the first time, you could either use Hajimashite or Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu. Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu, because Onegaishimasu is kind of like a little bit like please, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Well done. See, correct. Yay. Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu. I suppose you're right. Hajimemashite does mean kind of how do you do? Sort of how do you do? And you say that the first time you meet someone. But I suppose I feel a bit guilty now. Maybe poorly phrasing the quiz. but it was the second bit that gave it away, right? Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu kind of means please have favour upon me. And typically you'll sort of say, oh, Hajimemashite, Kurisu desu, yada, yada, yada. And then you'll end it with, Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu, kind of have favour upon me. Or if you're asking someone to do something for you that's a little bit of an effort, and you feel a bit guilty, you'd say, Yoroshiku Onegaishimasu, please have favour upon me. Sorry for kind of burdening you with this. But well done. And that is it. The quiz is over. I've got to work out your score, Pete. Yeah. I should have done a tally chart. I didn't. I just made a messy couple of notes all over some paper. Please say something and talk while I your pitiful score. Shouldn't take long.
We're going to be heading towards the fax machine, which is a chance for us to read out some of the emails and messages you've been sending over the past few weeks. We're always quite guilty about the fact we can't read them all out because there are just too many of them, quite frankly. We've got this week messages from Eric from Texas, McGill Gibney, and Andy Zhu as well. So look out for that in the second half of the show once Chris has done his maths.
Maths. That's well done. You're very good at this. I am pleased to announce your score is 11 out of 21. Not really that good. How do you feel about that? 11 out of 21. Not so good.
It's over half.
Is it?
And also your last question was absolute balls. So have a bit
but
of that.
Regardless, that's still pretty short. I mean, we have set you up, Pete, for 2 years almost in 100 and something podcasts. We've revered you as a Japan enthusiast, Nihonophile. And I feel a sense of guilt now. Was it a lie?
Am I qualified? Am I even qualified? Have we found out that my qualifications are worth nothing? Is the question.
Definitely. Maybe just dehydrated, Pete. Just dehydrated.
Yeah, I am pretty dehydrated, to be fair.
That'll be it. But let us know, ladies and gentlemen, your score in the quiz. Did you beat Pete? Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, or the fax machine, and we can rub it in the coming weeks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me. But I know someone with
everyone else is.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
when you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jack Mate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
And with that, we turn to the fax machine. What do we got this week of the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
Well, as previewed earlier on, we got an email from Eric from Texas, currently working through all of the podcasts, says Eric. I actually use them to motivate me for work. So I look forward to listening to my podcast while I type away endlessly on a keyboard as a programmer. Important work. I recently watched your TEDx talk about vlogging and if it makes a difference. You encouraged the audience to take up vlogging, and I was wondering if you still feel the same way as you did back then. And you think that there's still room for more vloggers in Japan, or if it's been played out a little bit due to the novelty of being a foreigner living in Japan, not being as exotic as it was back when you created your channel. Ooh, are you worthy? Are you a thing anymore, Chris? Isn't the thing you do important?
No, probably not. what a question. I think in my TEDx talk, I kind of said that, in that TED talk, I said that there just wasn't many vloggers in Tohoku, which is a shame, right? Because nobody was promoting it or showing it off. Like, everyone's in Tokyo, Nagoya, Fukuoka, Osaka. And it was just like me. At the time, I think I was the only major channel. The Abroad in Japan channel was the only one with like 100,000 subscribers plus in the area. And I was just sort of saying to people, pick up your camera and start vlogging and start showing off Tohoku. And since then, we've got a few. We've got like my friend Quinlan, Go North Japan. There's Sharla, Charmander, who's now in Morioka. So it's a bit better, but I think it's still relevant. I still think there's a lot of stories to tell in Japan. And, you know, there's a lot of room for people like Pete to, you know, drop in and make their own videos and start showing Japan in their own special, unique way. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the internet really needs my thoughts on anything, quite frankly.
I'd rather listen to your opinions than Ryotaro's. And of course, Ryotaro does have his own channel now. What's it called? I can't remember the name of it. I think he's forgotten his own channel. I think it's called like Ryotaro's Japan. Or Life.
I think that's the thing, yeah. He does a bit of language, a little bit of travel. It's not a bad watch.
It's all right. But I feel like he's given up. He did like a video already every week, and he's just not done one in a month now. So his YouTube craze is over. We've lost a shining star. But no, I think it's still relevant, Eric. And if any of you guys are listening, you're coming here to teach your work, I think, you know, as long as you find your own unique story and your unique angle on Japan, I think there's always a story to be told and the chance to vlog. So I don't think it's over just yet. And for me, I've certainly got no shortage of ideas. So keep an eye out. We've got one from McGill Gibney. It says, "Hi, Chris." No Pete, though. You... it does get into Pete there in the question. "As you are the preeminent English-speaking expert on everything Japanese Kit Kat, could you please tell me why Japanese students eat Kit Kats for their entrance exams? And when you and Pete sit your Japanese proficiency tests, what snack of choice would be washed down by your strong zeros? Cheers, fellas. McGill Gibney." Do you know why Kit Kats are given to students before their entrance exams, Pete? Do you remember?
Energy or...
energy.
I don't really
Kit
know,
Kat
to be
specifically.
Honest. You can't write clues on foil? I don't know.
It's basically the Kit Kat sounds like Kitokatsu, Japanese phrase literally meaning to surely win or to surely kind of succeed. And I, you know, that wasn't intentional by Kit Kat. It was just sheer luck that Kit Kat sounds like Kitokatsu. So they give it to students as good luck. I think parents and elderly relatives buy some Kit Kats. And if you look at a Japanese Kit Kat on the back, there's a space where you can write on it, like good luck in your test or from Auntie Natsuki or Uncle Takeshi.
I don't know.
But you can write on the back of the Kit Kat, give it to the student, and that will motivate them. And then they'll surely win the entrance exam. Pretty cool, eh?
It's adorable.
It is, isn't it?
Adorable. Yeah.
As for the second question, when you and Pete sit your Japanese proficiency test, what snack of choice would be washed down with your strong zero? What would you have, Pete? What would be your snack?
I just have something absolutely massive, so I can write all the answers on it, like a massive dairy milk or a big airport Toblerone.
airport Toblerone.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I would sneak in some strong... I'd have some jelly, energy jelly, wouldn't it? That's got to be
the one. Yes.
Keep me going.
Of course. Add to the jelly. T's on jelly. Lovely.
Brilliant. We got one from Andy Zoll. Andy Zoll. It says, hey, Chris and Pete, I admire the work that you've both created, and I got really stoked when you announced that two podcasts are coming every week. Hip hop, hooray. Honestly, I misread that. It doesn't say hip hop hooray. It says hip
hooray. Hip hop hooray.
I don't know why I misread that. On a serious note, I went to Japan once when I was 19. Oh, fuck's sake, you're going to have to read it. I got the giggles. Fuck's
hip
sake.
Hip hooray. On a serious note, I went to Japan once when I was 19 with my friends and I had a blast. Except I didn't eat sushi at all because the location that I was only had a convenience store sushi, namely the 7-Eleven stuff. And it was the plain old cucumber and carrot rolls. Chris, I hear from your videos that you love sushi, especially the ones with raw salmon on top or otoro. My first question is, have you ever experienced a bad stomach after eating the raw salmon sushi or just sushi in general? My second question is, if you're on a budget going to Japan, say $500, what would you do in the first 3 days to make a memorable trip? Thank you. I hope I get picked. Hey, hey. Love from San Francisco, California. Andy Zoo, best regards. Lovely air from you, Andy.
I'm still laughing. I don't even know why. I don't find hip hop hooray that funny. I just think I've just gone mental after a four hour drive. I'm losing my marbles here. It's a good question. You'd think maybe eating raw fish would be bad for your stomach. And actually I can't recall a single time where I've had some raw sushi or salmon or anything and felt ill. I don't know why that is. Maybe my stomach's strong. Or I just suspect sushi's not too bad for your stomach. Not really an expert on the subject, but what I can say is no, nothing's ever gone wrong. I do get a lot of family and friends like sending me photos or articles of people that have had like a parasite in their sushi, which is a bit nightmarish, to be honest, and that is not something I like thinking about. I remember I saw a photo of that once and I stopped eating sushi for like 6 months, but it is incredibly rare. They do freeze sushi, so that's not an issue. And I think if that was a regular occurrence, people in Japan just wouldn't do it. People just wouldn't eat it, right? Because people here are very conscious of their health. So that's my insurance policy, just the Japanese mentality.
Just go to nice places, I guess, isn't it? And also, I don't think you'd get any bad stomachs eating sushi because, you know, the actual sashimi, the meat is actually quite easy to break down, I would say. Very, very soft.
Absolutely.
Easier than steak.
What about the second question, though? Going to Japan on a budget, $500. What would you do on your first 3 days to make a memorable trip, Pete? What would you do? Open-ended that one.
$500. I mean, you'd have to stay in like in capsule hotels, wouldn't you, I suppose? And no taxis, get yourself a Suica card. Just go around the Yamanote line, getting off at every stop. Just seeing what's going on, really, I guess, yeah. Maybe check out Chris's website where he details all of the cheap and free things you can do around about Tokyo. I'm fairly certain I've seen you do something on that on one of your videos.
Definitely.
Might be wrong.
That's an excellent time to plug the website, abroadinjapan.com. Mm. Get on there, ladies and gentlemen. Indeed. Lots of ideas. I think we did a podcast on this about a month ago, what to do, or was it what to do on a big budget? I'm not sure. But what we will do, Andy, we'll do a dedicated episode to that one because it's a big topic and a topic that a lot of people are interested in. Budget travel is always a popular one. But in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, keep the stories, questions coming in. Oh, my God. Keep the stories, questions.
Oh, my word, he's falling to pieces.
Coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in a couple of days, 3 or 4 days now, to do it all over again when I will be hydrated and I won't be mental. I look forward to seeing you there, guys. Take care. Enjoy the next few days and we'll see you then. Have a good one.
is a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.